The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. I don't know whether it's going to be the Pfizer vaccine or is if it's going to be Pfizer. I think I'm going to stick with Pfizer-mectin. I don't know. They don't have that. Is it Pfizer-mectin or monkeypox vectum? I don't know. But let me go back to the phone, 770-5633. Hello, line two. You are up. Welcome. What's on your mind? Who's this?
Hey, Bill. It's Wild Salmon.
Steve, how you doing? What's up?
Now, I'm actually from three generations ago because my mom was raised by her grandparents. And her description of being a child was way different than it was today. She was severely disciplined. I don't know that she was spanked, but girls are different than boys. So, you know, she would say that her grandfather would tell her to stop littering. Well, if she didn't have her stuff where it was supposed to be, that was called littering.
Mm-hmm. A bit of a bit of emotional abuse going on there.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. Society depended on good citizens. And, you know, kids always test limits. That's just what kids do.
Yep.
And kids that don't have limits turn out to be unhappy. And kids that have limits within reason know where they're supposed to be and what they're supposed to do. And as you grow up, you know, you're given a wider area of limits and you kind of push and push until somebody pushes back. And if you keep pushing, eventually you end up either killing yourself or getting in trouble with the law. So the spanking isn't necessarily a bad thing. The worst part of getting spanked when I was a kid was you had to sit and get a lecture for a long time.
And yep.
When it came to the end and you got spanked, you were glad it was over with. I mean, it only happened to me
once. Yeah, the spank was sort of anticlimactic in some ways. If it was just a spanking. Now, if it was a beating, if people, because I knew there were kids that got beaten too. That's not good.
No. This was a whack on the butt with a rubber. He had a rubber strap. It was Principal Warren at Jacksonville Elementary School.
Oh, really?
I can still see this rubber strap that he had with that grooves on it. And me and a guy named Larry Dorsey had gotten a fight, and I think I may have caused it. We were playing some game, and there was a line, and I may have left and came back or whatever. Anyway, we got a couple of blows thrown. And so the whole thing was you just did not fight. And, you know, you have to come up with a way to control the emotions of young people and to let them know that their limits, and that works. I mean, we had two boys. And I think when one was 10 or 11 and the other one was, they were 4 years apart. And they would fight constantly. I came home from work one day and my wife was in tears and the boys were just hassling each other. So I sat them down and I said, look, here's how it's going to be from now on. If one of you cries, you're both going to get a spanking. And the spanking was a willow switch. And, you know, tight jeans and a whack across the butt with a willow switch. And the old thing about
that would sting.
A small switch is more easy. So they got to cut the switch and they learned that the little one wasn't necessarily better. But it wasn't too long. I heard them in the bedroom. They both were in the same bedroom going, oh, here, you take this. It's okay. They learned to get along.
Oh, they learned to cooperate then. They cooperated because,
yes.
Okay, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Thanks for the memory there. 770-5633. Of course, would that get you in trouble with CPS these days? I don't know. Let me go to line three. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Not So Crazy.
Hello, Gene.
Yeah, well, hello to you. And I was just calling. My belief system is that part of the time, most of the time, we're non-physical. We don't feel anything. We're in a non-physical state. And when we come here, we have to learn what pain, suffering, and misery is. And it's best to learn it when you're young to where it might not be so bad.
When we come into the physical body from soul existence. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And pain is part of the process, in other words.
Yeah, when you come here, you got to learn about all that all over again. You might have been here and experienced it a million times before, but you forget every time.
You know, what is You know, what is pain if you're in the soul realm? And do they force you to watch, like, you know, continuous episodes of Keeping Up with the Kardashians or something like that?
Probably force us to watch this place down here, hoping I never go there.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Gene. Let me go to line one. Hi, we're back to the beginning. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Welcome.
Hey, it's Matt.
Hey, Matt. What's on your mind?
Well, I got two quick things. RFK, I know that he only had a small percentage of the vote over the last couple of months, but I was wondering, I actually sent you something on this on Friday, but I was wondering if, because he could potentially be in a position to do something, if Trump were to put him as, you know, head czar of, you know, health, education, things like, you know, things along those lines, that some of his people might actually come back. Because I wonder if part of the reason his numbers dropped is not because people were excited about Kamala Harris saying, oh, well, I wouldn't have voted for Joe, so I'll go ahead and throw my vote away on this guy. I think a lot of those voters probably left him because they figured he just wasn't going to win, and they didn't want to throw their vote. But maybe they want his policy. So I'm thinking that maybe, you know, it's a little far-fetched, but potentially that could bring in more people than the pundits think right now. On the spanking, last spanking I ever got, my brother and I were riding to church in the back of our truck, and we had a camper shell, and my brother opened the door, and I said, Dad is going to freak out when we get to church. I'm telling you, we're going to be in trouble. But he was 14, and I was 12. Sure enough, we get there. Dad pulls off the belt. We're standing on the sidewalk. Everybody's already in church. Pulls off his belt. He spanks us once each once. And we looked at each other and started laughing. And then he started laughing. And he goes, well, I guess that's off the table now. And that was it. He realized that the spanking was for little kids. It's not for a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old because it doesn't affect them the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed. Yeah, I never got spanked when I was an older child, but there were a couple of times I did as a young one, and I recall having deserved it greatly, truth be told. Did I ever tell you the story about my brother Mike? What my brother Mike used to do? My brother Mike, his birthday was on St. Patrick's Day. We always used to say that he was just like the little leprechaun. If he wasn't stirring the pot amongst us, he just wasn't happy unless we were kind of stirred up. That was just Mike. Mike's still that way, you know, even today, as he's, 60 years old now, right? And it was so funny, though, that my father made the paddle for us back in the 1960s, the early 1960s when we were this. We were all little kids at this point. It was a paddle with the holes drilled in it. You had to do this. Diana and I, my sister Diana and I, shared one side. Michael had his own side, right? Michael had his own side with his name on it because he tended to be a little naughtier, right? But there were some times, though, that we knew there were problems that my mother still laughs about, remembering watching Mike looking around to see if anyone's looking at him. And he went into the little cabinet where the paddle was kept, and he took the paddle out, and he hid it underneath the couch, right? And so Mom at that point said,
the cover-up.
Yeah, I knew that he had done something and then had to go looking and seeing what the problem was. Yeah, you had to laugh about it. But, yeah, it wasn't beatings, but there were some corrections when needed. And some of us needed more correcting than others. That's all there was to it.
To keep me out of trouble, my dad basically said, let me be the reason you never do anything wrong. That's all he had to say. And those words ring in my head every day.
There you go. Appreciate the call, Matt. Good call. It's at 12 after 7. Pat Fahey's going to join me in a few minutes. He wants to refute some of what was said last week in my conversation with Commissioner John West. And we'll have that conversation coming up in about 5-6 minutes.
Rule number one, if you're looking to sell a home, here's Bill Meyer.
There are just some days I feel like drama swirls around us, the whole political situation. And there's a lot of drama in Josephine County right now. Of course, an attempted recall in place right now for Josephine County Commissioner John West. And I talked with him about that a couple of times. And I've said before, I have no dog in this fight because I don't get to vote in Josephine County elections, but I'm certainly happy to talk with the people who are involved with this or bring up some issues. And in this particular case, we have a county commissioner position 3 candidate, Pat Fahey, who's running in Josephine County. Pat, welcome to the show. You wanted to raise a few issues. Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning, Bill, and good morning to your listeners.
Okay. Hey, so what's going on? I talked with John West last week a couple of times over the last couple of weeks about some of the accusations being thrown at him over the recall petition, and I guess there are a couple of statements that you wanted to refute. You said he didn't say, or they didn't say right, or something. Why don't you just give it to me straight here?
Okay. Last Friday, about at the 44 minute, I can't remember which segment of your show is. John's talking about the recall and how he feels he's been singled out and punished. And he made two statements that bothered me. And of course, what's funny is that John can make Commissioner West can make all kinds of statements, but the only the ones that bother you are the ones that you're involved in. So he made two statements about me, and I thought I'd like to clear the air. The first statement he made alleges that I was at the recall signing, and I was not. I try and stay away from the recall as much as I can. I have my own race to run, and to be honest, for me, the recall is a little bit of a distraction. So I really try and stay out of it. I have a lot of good friends who are involved with the recall, and you can't really stay out of it in Josephine County, but I'm not involved. I haven't signed the recall. I haven't told anybody to sign the recall.
Are you involved in the recall in any way, or shape, or form?
No. No.
Do you support the recall?
Well, like I said, I'm in my own race. I'll let Mr. West deal with the recall the best he can. I will tell you this. I have some very, very dear friends that are involved in the recall. And you have to at least acknowledge where your friends are coming from. So, no, I'm not involved with the recall in any fashion, but I get told about the recall. So, on the Friday that the recall was submitted, I had been given a heads up beforehand that it was going on at the courthouse. And I told my friends that I am not going to be there. I'm going to be somewhere else. So when Mr. West looks at pictures and sees my face there, he's looking at somebody else. And, of course, I'm not that unique. I'm just the old white guy with a beard, and there's a bunch of them in Josephine County. So the first statement he made about me being there is false. And it's an easy mistake to make. So I don't hold any hard feelings about Mr. West saying that. But the second allegation was much more pointed and to be perfectly honest, it's on the cusp of being slanderous. He made a statement that I met with him before the primary, and I was trying to cut a deal with him to get him to support a county manager, and specifically Lillian Morgan.
Yes.
And that's absolutely 100% false. Now, I will tell you this. Prior to the primary, a couple months prior, he summoned me to his office. He asked me to go to his office, and he wanted to talk about my support for the charter proposal. And we talked about it at length, pros and cons of different things, the idea of five commissioners versus three, the ideas of professional manager, all those things I support. And I would have liked to see the charter being changed. But we didn't mention a deal. We didn't mention Lily Morgan. And for him to say otherwise is, I don't know how else to characterize it, but it was a lie.
So in other words, now, John says he has you on video going in and out of the office on the day that he was talking about, that the deal was supposedly talked about.
Oh, I'm not denying I went there. He asked me to go there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go there under my own volition. He asked me to go there, and to be honest, I'm from the generation that if a county commissioner would like to see you, you probably ought to go. So I went there with the assumption he wanted to talk about the charter, and we did. We talked about the pros and cons, what he didn't like about it, and what I liked about it. And we left with, in fact, I remember saying, John, there's a lot of stuff we can agree to disagree on. And that's how I left it. But Lily Morgan was never brought up, nor was any kind of deal, because I don't do those kind of things. So, and he knows I didn't say that. And I don't know why he's pursuing that course of action. And I don't think it helps his cause at all. And I'm not sure if it helps my opponent's cause at all. But he said it. I'm denying it. If he'd like to proceed with that fabrication, he's okay to do that. I'd like to challenge a polygraph test to see if he really does believe that. I know I would.
Yeah. So. Well, okay. The thing is, though, and that statement that he made, though, rings more true to me, Pat, because... And I'll tell you why. I'm just telling you as someone, like I said, I don't have a dog in this fight, all right?
Right.
But the thing is, though, is that the opponents of John West in the recall all seem to be maneuvering in the same way. And Lily Morgan was you know, lead petitioner on the recall, right?
Right.
And Lilly, in my opinion, has been trying to get, you know, into a situation like that for some time. Here's, I guess, where I'm a little bit suspicious is when you said some things here in the beginning, Pat, in which you said, what does it mean you try not to get involved in the recall? Because I asked you a direct question if you support the recall or not. It sounds to me like you're trying to split hairs with me.
Well, I kind of am. To be honest, Bill, I am. I'm running my own race. I just think, for me, supporting the recall is a big distraction. It would probably make me enemies that I don't really need in the political race, so I avoid talking about it as best I can.
Mm-hmm.
I only talk about it when I get questions like this. Am I intending on signing the recall? I don't think so. So Commissioner West's problem with the recall is his alone. I try and stay out of it. Regarding Lilly, I've known Lilly for years. I consider her a friend. She's helped us at the library a great deal. I don't think I'd hire Lilly as the county manager, and here's the reason why. You get a position like that that's going to be fairly expensive. It has a lot of responsibilities. I think we ought to look outside of Josephine County. I think we ought to put a nationwide search on. I think you get to that level of power and leadership, you need somebody with better credentials than we have locally. Nothing gets Lilly. Like I said, Lily's a dear friend, but she wouldn't be my choice.
Okay. Pat, what about the recall issue? You know, I still can't really get a direct answer from you. What has John West done that has risen to the level of recallable problems in your view? Because when I think of recalls, I wasn't a supporter of the recall against the mayor of the city of Grants Pass. You know, back at that time, I thought that was a distraction. Should have just waited for a main election, but people disagreed with me at that time. I get the impression that we're now doing recalls just because we agree with a decision or two here and there. What is going on in your opinion that he has done that is worthy of recall?
Okay, a couple things. Probably one close to my heart, which would probably be dealing with the library. So here he is. He'd been told by several legal voices that the opt-out policy doesn't work, and it didn't. He decided to proceed. He and Herman both decided to proceed with this, knowing that the legalities were questionable, and he probably knew that it was going to go to court. He thought it was politically expedient to support his supporters to continue with the opt-out. So it wasn't really about whether or not Mr. Pelfrey should be allowed out of the library. It was to support the politics of what he considered was appropriate. And that cost money. It cost everybody money. It cost the county money, cost the library money, cost the library supporters money, and he knew that.
Yeah.
So that's one strike, and that's I'm a big library supporter. I always have been.
You said you've been a big library supporter. And you know something, Pat? That's one of the issues that I've had with people. I love library services. I even say the same thing in Jackson County. But Jackson County and Josephine County have not been ideologically free libraries for a long, long time. Everything about library services these days is politicized. So I find it fascinating that you would have an issue with you know, people who aren't necessarily in favor of the political bent of libraries these days. People wanting to opt out if there was a legal way to not pay and opt out because you're not being serviced by that district. Why not try to opt out?
Well, before I answer that, I'd like to correct a statement you made. You said in one voice, Josephine and Jackson County libraries, they are entirely different. And if you actually visited one of the libraries, you'd find out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have drag queen story time. We may have reading to dogs. We're more about summer reading programs than anything else. We're not trying to groom anybody. And the people that make those allegations are flat wrong. And quite honest, they've never been to a library. I'm not to a Josephine County library.
Okay.
It's pretty much the library you had in the 1950s. In the 1950s, you had the same people that wanted to ban books like, you know, Catcher in the Rye and things like that. There are people that want to ban books now. And when a patron has a problem with a placement or a book, they can write a request to have it either moved or removed or moved. And we have moved books
mm-hmm.
based on patrons. So we are responsive to the community. In
Yeah,
because see, all I'm getting at though is that you know, we have age restrictions on all sorts of things for and many different activities. And the American Library Association, which of course is drives policies at most of our libraries, including Josephine County, no doubt, is pretty much nothing gets moved, nothing gets banned, nothing is questioned, no matter what. And I disagree with that. And I also disagree. Right. But anyway, it's not about my opinion about the library service. I'm just, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off on the in the weeds on that particular thing. But if there was a legal way to do that, I understand why people would want to do it. And I also understand why the library, but remember, the, Herman and John also froze any further applications once they found out that that was not going to work. You do remember that. And then the library, the, at least the way they told it to me, the library then hired attorneys to fight this.
Oh, yeah. It was because the reason why, the precedent that it would set, that you could have dropped, you could have used the same argument to drop out of any law enforcement district, any fire district, any hospital district that you didn't want to pay for.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, if you're not serviced by it, yeah.
Yeah. So there was a lot of people pretty interested in it. The small district association was the one who helped us out a lot on that. And I heard, a discussion yesterday about, well, the only reason they dropped it was that procedurally it was wrong. Well, yeah, that's true. The case was dropped because the procedure that the county followed was incorrect. The and the reason why that was the ruling, not the merits, is because that's the process you go on. A judge looks at, do they follow procedures? No, they didn't. You're out. If they would have followed procedures, then we would have gone to the merit of the issue, whether somebody could opt out of a district like that. And there are places where opting out is the most appropriate thing. Irrigation district, you can't get water. That makes sense. I'm opting out of that. But there are very few, and it's meant to be very few. You know, once the district is in place, there's financial obligations that requires the patrons to pay for it. Now, in this case, Mr. Pelfrey didn't figure he got any value out of it. That's not necessarily the way the statute is written. And it's, he's talking about proceeding with it. So you and I may be talking about this issue a year from now at some other venue when it goes to court if Mr. Pelfrey proceeds. So we'll find out soon. That will be it. That's one of the issues. I watched the whole story about the Sportsman's Park. Now, I'm a member of Sportsman's Park, so don't get me wrong. I'm a Second Amendment advocate. So I watched them give away the Sportsman's Park, and I heard the reason for changing or for getting rid of it, for giving away to sports, Joseph County Sportsman, changed two or three times over the course of the discussion. They say they want to get rid of it because lead, you know, we want to get out of the liability of the lead shot downfield. That was their big one to start with. I brought up that, you know, environmental laws, you don't get out of that liability just by changing ownership. You are still on the hook. So then it changed to something else. I really don't know what the real reason why the county got rid of the sports park. And one of the things that just leaves a big question mark in my head, when they did get rid of it, they left the cell tower revenue with the Sportsman Park. That's $16,000 a year cell tower revenue, and they just let it go. They could have structured that in such a way to keep the revenue off the cell tower, but they didn't. So we can talk about Pike Sports. You've heard Mr. West's point of view on it. There's a lot of, you know,
Okay, Pat, you know, the interesting part about it, the way the story's been explained to me is that everybody was fine with Pipe Fork being sold off to that other group until someone was talking about, hey, we want to put something in the deed that would require it to remain open and open to the public. And then the story changed from the other side of this, saying that, well, he didn't really care if it stayed open, which kind of tells me it's more of the standard environmental lockup public land away from people.
Yeah. Well, have you ever dealt with the federal government where they accept provisions like that? I'd actually like to see it, because you're saying in perpetuity, regardless of the condition of the forest there, we're going to leave it open. Even though it may be hazardous to people's health, life, they're trying to say you can't do that forever. In fact, I'm not sure if you could actually craft a document that would pass legal muster to say that.
Well, in that case, don't sell it.
Okay. So the neighbors out there, what, you know, the next is this, when this problem started was...
Well, somehow if Josephine County holds deed to the property, it's no problem because it'll remain open. So what's the problem?
because when they this whole thing started, when Josephine County announced they're going to log it,
uh-huh,
and clear cut log in, that's when it started. That's several years ago, and it's amazing how the number changed. You know, the federal government came back with you heard about the yellow paper appraisal, come back at $2.02 million, and then magically the county says, oh no, our own appraiser says it's 2.7. They don't give any rationale for it. They don't show the appraiser's work, and supposedly it's proprietary knowledge. I'm sorry, in a court of law, that wouldn't stand up.
All right, well, it's good. You know, Pat, I'm glad I don't have more time to talk about it right now. We'll have to have you back another time, I think. But it's good to know, though, that you're in favor of the recall. I think you've made it pretty clear in our conversation. So I know you've tried to make this sound as if this was as if you were kind of neutral ground on this one. I don't think that's the case. Can we agree on that much at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
Bill, I will say absolutely. Do I think that he's done a poor job? I absolutely do. And I think you can almost tell from the beginning, and some of the troubles he's having now with ethics violations is of his own making, because he decided he didn't want to go to Commissioner College. Takes a couple days. You learn about the biggest thing you learn about is Oregon public meeting laws. He could have avoided at least a couple of the ethics violations by just knowing what the Oregon public meeting laws are. There's a lot of pitfalls and potholes to step into there.
So all of a sudden, so I'm supposed to believe here now. I'm outside of Joe County now. Maybe I'd feel differently if I were there. I'm supposed to believe now that that John was doing okay, and then all of a sudden, just in the last couple of months, just became the worst person on the planet for Josephine County. I'm supposed to believe that?
No.
With ethics charges, and because I know how the ethics charge game is played. Both sides of the aisle will do this. You know, the accusation ends up being the conviction in the court of public opinion, even after it gets dismissed, you know?
Yep. I understand. And you asked that it happened, I admit, just lately. No, I think people have had issues with John for a long time.
Uh-huh.
There's people that have worked with him before in different counties. The people over Glendale, it'd be nice to get somebody from Glendale tell you their experience with Mr. West. So, and all you have to do is just look at the races he's run and how he's run the races. I am suspecting in the next 6 weeks there's going to be a slanderous, pretty negative ad about me. Because that's, boy, even though he's not running against me, he will probably fund one. He's already funded one that was kind of humorous in his childishness.
Well, I find it fascinating, though, that you're claiming then the Lily Morgan talk was totally fabricated, a total fabrication. I just want to say you're on the record, and I'm wondering why he would bring this up, knowing that you would come on and then say no. But, hey, gave you your say, Pat, all right? You know, so we'll see about it. I have my suspicions. I've seen enough political hits over the years to be a little bit suspicious on this kind of thing. And I think this particular recall and some of the reasons being held up are a little bit stinky, in my opinion. I wish you the best of luck, though, in your race, though, on position 3. Okay? We'll continue to talk. All right.
If you'd like to chat about anything else, call me.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Pat Fahey. It's 737 at KMED and 99.3 KBXG. Got a mess with the IRS or a tax date with the state? You may need representation. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com. First Response Resolution, your local tax resolution experts in Eagle Point, defending your rights as a taxpayer. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com.
We've heard it all.
Apparently, those larger tires don't provide more clearance.
It was a really big bird. Might have been a pterodactyl.
I should have screwed that tool shelf in the garage to the wall.
But the reason you need auto body repair doesn't matter to us as much as making your car look new again, and the process easy for you. At Lithia Body and Paint, we've been getting Southern Oregon drivers back on the road since 1946. Speed, service, accuracy. That's Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
Drake's Paint and Supply, your only locally owned paint store, is now open in South Medford. The South Medford store offers the same top quality Benjamin Moore paint and stain and all the equipment and supplies the North Medford and Grants Pass stores offer, with the legacy of service and value Drake's is known for. Drake's Paint, your local Benjamin Moore dealer, with 3 Rogue Valley locations to serve you in North Medford on North Pacific Highway, Grants Pass in the Parkway Village, and now in South Medford between Central and Riverside, just north of where the two combine.
One in four Americans have a disability. I'm one of them.
I'm also a working mom who cares deeply about making sure every child with a disability thrives by getting their access needs met. We've got a trusted ally by our side. Easter Seals provides children and families the foundation for lifelong success through early learning programs, skills training, and prep for college and career. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours. Join us at EasterSeals.com.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
All right, it's 7:39, 770-5633. We'll grab a couple of calls here before news. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
This is Ron Smith, Grants Pass.
Hello, Ron. Let's hear it.
Hey, Bill, I just forwarded you a Facebook post that Pat Fahey is posting the recall link, and he comes on your show and says he's not for it, but yet he's posting a link to it.
Well, it's just sharing information.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Have a good day.
Yeah, I have my... I'm sorry, I don't have a dog in this fight, but I have my suspicions about this, that it's a fascinating job. But anyway, hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Ed, Bill.
Hello, Ed. How are you?
Well, I'm literally taken aback by one of the statements that this gentleman made during his talk, and his criticizing of Commissioner West not going to Commissioner College, okay? And that, I did a lot of research into that many years, you know, and followed it extremely closely. But that particular thing is set up, and then they have the director of the National Policy Consensus Center come in, and they teach the commissioners, they take all newly elected commissioners, and they introduce them to the power of consensus.
In other words, we introduce you to the power of not paying attention to the law, but doing these faked up, predetermined outcome, mostly leftist ways of looking at the world.
Well, basically, it comes down to using the agency of the state relationship to create an untenable future for your people. And this is the thing, you know, this, you know, every perspective that allows that into our lives. And I live in Jackson County. Like you, I don't have a dog in the fight for Josephine County, but I know that the county structure is the most important. Now, here's a guy who supported the, as I think he said it, the county charter changes, mm-hmm. Five commissioners. This, all of this was done to weaken the county structure in the state of Oregon. And this is, we have a good, you know, a reasonably good, safe thing right now. And they're taking the people that are working for us and they criticize them. They want to, oh, let's do a recall. Let's do this. This is nothing but a distraction. And it's all based upon the failure of their ability to change the charter. And the aspect, what they're doing is just wasting money and time. And, you know, you look at all of these things, and we have to go back to a baseline. First off, he didn't go to Commissioner College.
Well, I didn't mention that to Pat, but I was actually thinking that would actually stand him in good stead if you didn't go and get educated on how to do policy consensus instead of looking at the law.
Well, everybody in Josephine County needs to understand that was probably the best thing that he did, was to avoid the entrapment of that into a concept that he can, by consensus, force upon you things that you really don't want. And this is, and now you look at people running for office that want to support that. They're saying by supporting that they want to force upon you things that you don't want.
Through policy. Through policy, where we get people who want predetermined outcomes, such as dam removal, such as stopping of logging, such as all sorts of things, getting rid of jet boats on certain parts of the river. It's not a matter of what's right or even what the law speaks to. It's where we find the consensus when it comes right down to it.
Well, the example in Jackson County, our library system was supported by timber revenue, timber sharing revenue from the federal government. We have to remember that 50% of the land, over 50% of the lands, are controlled by the federal government. They're managed by the federal government. Now, when we lost the timber sharing revenue here, especially in Jackson County, we lost upwards of $30 million a year. Now, that pot of money supported our libraries. Well, what happened? Well, now we have to pay for them with our property taxes. Now, you look at this, and he said the piece of land that they were talking about, the Josephine County sat there with revenue and every aspect of it coming from a logging operation on it. Well, okay, those were the standard logging operations. That's how they made money. And you look at this thing, okay, replant it, do whatever, take some, do selective logging, but come up with a proposal that makes sense instead of putting it on the backs of the citizens all the time.
All right. Ed, I always appreciate your thoughtfulness, and thank you for bringing it back to the policy consensus blob, which is tended to run so much of what we don't really want here in Jackson and Josephine County. All right?
Just as a political candidate, anybody who supports that aspect of it, you need to reexamine as a potential candidate, because they are out in the end. They don't really understand this world of politics, of what they want to introduce. And if they want to criticize him for that, they're wrong, because that gave him the ability to examine the needs of the body politic of his county and say no to this intrusion.
Thank you, Ed. Always a good talk. 745 at KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Should you trust your drinking water on a do-it-yourself water test? I don't think so. At the Grants Pass Water Lab, we get a lot of calls about this. The kits are cheap, and yeah, they look easy, but the results can be confusing and still require a lab follow-up. Save your money and go straight to the water lab. Our equipment is much better at detection, and our staff sure beats a hard-to-read instruction packet. Find us online at thewaterlab.com or gpwaterlab.com.
Hi, it's John at Welburn's Weapons. The only thing better than shooting is shooting with a suppressor. Welburn's is Southern Oregon's suppressor headquarters, stocking models from Silencer Code, Dead Air, Griffin Armament, Rugged, Q, Thunderbeast, and many more. And we can order practically any suppressor on the market. Check in with us for monthly incentives to save on suppressors, too. Come see the suppressor experts. Welburn's Weapons on Crater Lake Highway, just south of White City.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MillettConstruction.com. Bill Meyer from the KMED News Center. Here's what's going on. Both Jackson and Josephine County Commissioners will bring wildfire mapping concerns to a meeting in Salem this afternoon, which is being put on by the Association of Oregon Counties. Jackson County Commissioner Rick Dyer attends in person, while Josephine County's commission airs the meeting live for the public to view starting at 1 p.m. today at Ann Basker Auditorium in Grants Pass. The state legislature passed Senate Bill 762, which required the creation of these maps, ranking the wildfire risk of all properties. Concerns being raised that large portions of rural property is being unfairly targeted for extra fees and regulations. Many rural properties seeing either the cancellation of coverage or skyrocketing insurance premiums. The hope is the Association of Oregon Counties can persuade the state to end or extensively rework the mapping program. A fatal shooting Saturday night in Medford at an apartment complex on Berryman Road. Medford police dispatched to the complex shortly after 6 o'clock, reported someone was trying to break into one of the apartments. When officers arrived on scene, they discovered a man dead of an apparent gunshot wound. Early investigation indicates the dead man, armed with a knife, approached one resident inside while another resident opened fire in self-defense. More information as it becomes available. And for the last 15 years or so, Crater High School has been home to three schools under the same roof. That's about to change. In a welcome back letter sent to district families, Superintendent Walt Davenport says Crater will reunite to a one-school system. Davenport says the reunification will foster a more cohesive and unified educational environment. Bill Meyer, KMED News.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, it's Jolene with Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. We've got summer savings on quality Continental tires. Through August, get a $110 Visa prepaid card in the mail when you purchase a set of qualifying tires for your truck, SUV, or van. And there's 16 different popular styles to choose from, including cross contact, 4x4 contact, terrain contact, and premium contact. Continental is one of our most recommended tire brands, so if you need a set for your truck, SUV, or van, come see us at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros in Phoenix.
Take the Long Way Home was one of four hit singles off Supertramp's 1979 album Breakfast in America. If you find yourself losing your sanity and taking the long way home because of growing cracks in your ceilings and walls, give Millett Construction a call for a free estimate to fix the damage and correct your foundation problem. Stop thinking you never see what you want to see because your home used to be so nice. With Millett's help, it can be again. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
Hi, I'm Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Melissa Hansen joins me. She is the vice president of the Parents Television Council, parentstv.org. And wanted to talk about some schools since back to school is on a lot of people's minds. And gosh, we've had great trouble. I think, by the way, first off, welcome back to the show, Melissa. It's always a pleasure having you on. Good morning.
Thanks. Morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, we could use more of your help here in the state of Oregon because, remember, Oregon is number 45th in the nation for quality of education and achievement. So, but, you know, we're told all it's going to take is more money. More money, and that will take care of the problem. But I'll set that aside here at the moment. But you've been looking into and pushing an agenda, which I think is quite interesting. It has to do with smartphones in the classroom. And some of the studies coming out are really showing that it would be a good idea to restrict and or eliminate them. What say you? What's going on with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating that we've really kind of done a 180 on tech policy in schools, because you may recall that, you know, it was only about 10 years ago or so, a lot of school districts were pushing this bring your own device or bring your own technology. They thought, well, we're going to take advantage of kids' attachment to these electronic devices and use them in the classroom and make them a pedagogical tool. And what they're finding is that it's really not helping at all. For starters, you know, handwritten notes, there are a lot of studies that show that handwritten notes, kids retain the information better than when they type the notes. There's a lot of research that shows that kids retain information better when they read off a printed page versus reading off of a screen. So it's not true at all that it's helping as a pedagogical tool. And there's also plenty of data that suggests that it's a distraction. And it's not only a distraction for the kid that's on the device, it's a distraction for the kids that are sitting around them. Because these colorful screens, they're magnetic. They draw the eye. That's what they're designed to do. So even if the kid in front of you or the kid next to you is the one on the phone, you're still going to look, because that colorful screen is going to capture your attention. And so what we're seeing is falling test scores, falling academic achievement. A lot of it is tied to cell phone use in the classroom.
Melissa, you have a white paper out there at PTC, Smartphones in the Classroom, What States Are Doing to Confront These Digital Distractions. That's the title of that. And a number of states are already being pretty proactive on this. I think Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, didn't he just come out with that a few days ago or a few weeks ago? Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This was, certainly within the last month or so, he issued an executive order to create cell phone-free education, recognizing that it was a necessary step to improve education and children's mental health, especially in light of a lot of data that ties chronic cell phone use and problematic cell phone use to anxiety and depression in kids. And so, you know, I think it's all to the good, you know, to the extent that we can help break kids free of this screen addiction that so many kids are suffering from.
I'm wondering where the resistance comes from, if any, to these policies. Is there any study being done on that? Because my suspicion is that you may have more pushback from parents than maybe from the kids. I don't know.
You're absolutely right about that. And that was, for me, really surprising. There's a bit of a cognitive dissonance going on, I think, with parents, because a lot of them, they see the problems that having these devices is creating. They see that their kids are addicted to their phones, they're on them all the time, and they're having problematic relationships on social media, and yet they're still putting these devices in their kids' hands. And then when the schools say, no, you got to put them away, the parents are the ones that are throwing fits. You know, I have to be able to text my little Johnny at 10:30 in the morning to see what he wants for dinner. And if I don't get an immediate response, I'm going to go ballistic. And it's insane. For centuries, parents were okay with their kids being at school and not being able to communicate with them throughout the day. And now, all of a sudden, if they don't get an immediate answer to their text message, they're they go off the rails.
So how does it end up working when schools have the school districts that have started? I know that we've had some Oregon school districts that are looking at or have started to implement some form of this. How does it work? Do you come in and you drop it off usually in a particular area and you turn it off? Or, I mean, how do you end up doing smartphone restrictions and bans in most government schools right now, given that they are so common and practically every kid has them now and every adult too, for that matter?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think what doesn't work is sort of an honor system where you can have it, but you need to keep it turned off and in your backpack. That absolutely doesn't work. What seems to work well in a lot of districts is they have these pouches. One company that makes them is Yonder, Y-O-N-D-R, I think is. So they're these magnetically locked pouches. You come in at the beginning of the day, you put your phone in your Yonder pouch, and it's locked. And you're allowed to keep it with you during the day, but it's locked, so you can't pull the device out and look at it. And then at the end of the day, before you go home, you unlock the pouch, and then you can have your phone back and be able to access it again. So that seems to be working pretty well for most of the school districts. And I understand, in fact, I think it was Arkansas just recently announced like a $7 million grant in order to get these Yonder pouches in their schools to help keep kids off the phone.
That's interesting. So is the Yonder pack then something that the child carries around so they keep the phone with them? It's just inaccessible?
Yeah. They have the phone with them, but they can't be on the device. They can't get onto it because it's locked in this it's in this magnetically locked pouch.
And who controls the magnetic lock?
The school administrators, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So if there's some kind of an emergency, I guess, they can take it to the school office or maybe a teacher even to get it unlocked in order to deal with the emergency. But I think it's also, it's important to get parents on the same page, too, and make sure that parents are aware of the problems that having these phones in the classrooms are creating and make sure that they're aware that, you know, if you really, really, really need to reach your child during the school day, you call the office. This is what generations of parents have done. You call the office, and the office can put you in touch with your child. You don't need to be calling them in the middle of algebra class.
Calling the office? That would never work. Oh, wait a minute. No. Now, I'm going to bring up something which might make the case for not having the phones locked away. And I don't know if maybe not enough of this goes on. What about, emergencies, an attack on a school, you know, something like that? Or what about, you think about some of the really woke poor teachers that have been exposed by the very nature of people, well, just recording what's going on in the classroom. Any thoughts about that? Has anyone brought that up, I should say?
Yeah, and those are concerns that have been expressed by parents. You know, what if there's a, you know, like an active shooter situation, for example? How do I reach my child? And I would suggest in a situation like that, your child needs to have their full focus and attention on being safe, getting themselves to a safe place, listening to the person that's there on the ground who has the situational awareness, who knows what's going on. They're going to be in a much better position to safely direct your child than, you know, a panicked mom who's, you know, tell me what's going on. What do you see? What do you see? What do you see? That's not going to be helpful in that kind of a situation. What's going to be helpful is allowing your child to listen to the person that's there on the ground with the expertise that knows how to get them to a place where they're going to be safe and protected.
Melissa, apparently what we're battling at this point then has been the trend to the so-called hover parenting, right? In which the child's never really left alone. I hope that this starts to be a growing trend because I'm just talking about me, and all I can do is talk about the way I was when I was a kid. I don't know if I could have survived my public school education as well as I did if I had been having something, dinging me all morning and getting involved with anything rather than concentrating on what I was having to do at that time.
Yeah. I think you make a great point about the hover parent problem. Jonathan Haidt came out with this book a few months ago called The Anxious Generation. One of the conclusions that he makes in that book is that this generation of children, there's a combination of problems that's really sort of stunting their maturity and development, and it's that they are overprotected in the real world and underprotected online. And so it's that hover parenting phenomenon that's contributing to their inability to mature and develop and figure out how to solve problems on their own and, you know, advocate for themselves at school and all these other things because mom and dad want to sit there and do everything for them.
Well, you've even heard some of the crazy statements in what some people, well, you've heard about some people going to job interviews, bringing their parents along with them.
Bringing their parents to job interviews. Yeah. I you know, when I was putting together the research for this white paper, I read about, you know, kid get a failing grade on a math test or something like that. So they text mom, "Mom, I got an F on my algebra test." And the mom all of a sudden put me on the phone with your teacher. And so, you know, instead of mom saying, "Well, you should have studied harder."
Yeah. Put away the cell phone, kid.
Mom wants to fight with mom wants to talk to the teacher about it. Why did you give my little Johnny an F?
Yeah. Yikes. All right. Well, this new white paper, Smartphones in the Classroom, What States Are Doing to Confront These Digital Distractions. And I think it's a growing trend. And where can people go find this here, Melissa?
Yeah, you can find more information at parentstv.org.
Parentstv.org. Melissa, interesting talk as always, and we'll have you back. Smartphones in the classroom, some fight to kind of restore a little bit of balance in the classroom. Good idea, okay? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
It's 8 o'clock. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. KBXG Grants Pass is where you are. Town Hall News next.
When you choose.